Heart. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
What is heart? Heart is running through a return man when the game is on the line. Heart is giving everything you have in practice, day after day. Heart is finding the strength to run down the field one more time when you can barely breathe. The heart in me pumps Husker Red.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by CornNation.com, a legacy member of the Jittery Monkey podcast family, and of course proudly affiliated with the SB Nation podcast network. My name is Greg Mahochko, and usually I would say the other two legs of the tripod, to my right, Hoss Reuter, to my left, John Dam Johnston, but they are not here. Hoss is having technical difficulties and probably needs a new laptop. And John is pulling his hair out and I think pulling servers apart. He's working, burning the candle at both ends. So we were planning on having him as a guest anyway, but it looks like he's going to be the co-host this week from CornNation.com, Mr. Paul Dalen. Paul, welcome back to the show, sir. It's been a while.
Thank you, Greg.
How's everything going?
Good. Live in large in Southern Texas. Which is rough in August, but is really nice in January and February. So y'all come on down.
Where the deer nice. And the antelope play, right?
Yeah, actually, it's where the coyotes dodge tumbleweeds and armadillos. Oh, here's one. Do you know why the armadillo crossed the road?
It's making its way north. I don't know. No, nothing specific.
Nah, to prove it could be done. And if you've ever been to Texas, you would understand what that joke means. You'll just have to Google it, I guess.
So here is my concern that armadillos could swim, because I've seen them, like you, on the side of the road oftentimes, and they're always dead. But I've seen them into Missouri. And then I'm pretty sure that I saw one in Illinois. And now I'm afraid that they're just going to take over. We have a serious – people don't know – everybody wants to talk about the fire in the Amazon, but we have a serious armadillo problem. I'm equating the two. That's what we do here. We make really grandiose, horrible comparisons. But the
it seems like a stretch to say I saw an armadillo in Missouri. To equate that with, I don't know, like the lungs of the planet are burning down.
Let me clarify. I saw a lot of them in Missouri, but I've seen one in Illinois where I live, and I'm like, oh crap, they're either figuring out how bridges work or they've learned to swim. Either way, they're continuing their trek north, and we all need to be on the lookout for armadillos.
Well, I don't know. I think they just roll up and probably just float like gray lumpy beach balls. I don't know.
And they're you know what? If it wasn't game week, that would be the title of this episode: gray lumpy beach balls, and people would be very confused and they'd listen. But gray lumpy beach balls, it is. It's unfortunately. Well, I don't say unfortunately. But to the benefit of many, we have a football game this week that we will talk about later. But any more thoughts on this armadillo situation? I mean, why are you chasing them out of Texas?
I'm not chasing them out of Texas. I actually think they're kind of cute. I ride my bike in the morning before it gets too crazy hot, and I see them all the time walking along the bike trail. And really, they're kind of cool animals. I mean, they're some of them are pretty good size, and honestly, they just don't give a shit about anything. I can ride right up to them, shine my light on them, and they're like, dude, what are you doing? Go away. Run along, little boy. So I kind of respect them.
Is there?
I think they're kind of dumb because they keep walking in front of cars, but I don't know. I'm going to give the armadillo the props. I got nothing against armadillos.
Now, to their credit, they were probably there before the streets, right?
They were probably here long before the streets.
I mean, do armadillos predate the highway system?
I'm pretty sure armadillos predate mammals, but I don't know. They probably owe their genesis back to something in, I don't know, an asteroid smacking into the Gulf of Mexico 68 million years ago.
Is it possible?
Armadillos are an evolutionary throwback. So, yeah, they've been around a while.
Let me throw this one out there for you, and then we probably need to move on from armadillos before everybody stops listening. Is it possible that the armadillo is really the cross? My son is very excited by this conversation with the Hot Wheels. Is it possible that the armadillo is a cross between a medieval knight in his suit of shining armor and a raccoon?
Dude.
You're welcome. I'm done.
Sure, why not?
I'm done.
Well, that's good.
Okay.
And if you want to know more about medieval knights, you can look up my book on Amazon. Can I make a plug for my own book on medieval history?
You should.
Nah.
No, I'm serious.
That at a different time.
I'm serious. I mean, we're not going to be talking. We're going to be talking about one of the other newer teams to the Big Ten in the Maryland Terrapins. Don't get us started on the Turtles. Hey, if we were previewing the Scarlet Knights of Rutgers, it would be much more easy. But since we've already said medieval knights, I would love to hear about your book, Paul.
I don't know. 6 years ago, I undertook a project to take about 5,000 page out of print series that I absolutely love. That was published between 1908 and 1923, 8 volumes, and transcribe them and sell them on the Kindle store. And it was right at the time that the Kindle was growing a lot, and I made a crap ton of money on it. So, and it's still available. I think I make about $50 a month or something. People don't want to buy it. So,
would you say it is the
king? I am an amateur medievalist. That's why I started this project, but I was not the original author of it. I'm actually just the editor of it. So,
would it be the Cambridge Modern History Volumes 1 through 5 or the Cambridge Medieval?
It would be that, but that one isn't nearly as good. It's the Cambridge Medieval History by J.B. Barrie.
Link that.
It's actually my absolute favorite. So,
we're going to link that and have that available in the post so that anybody who – because – okay, this is a serious question.
Okay.
First of all, it's only $4.99, so I encourage anybody to buy it because, first of all, you're getting some history, which is a lot better than a lot of the crap you're probably reading out there. Secondly, Paul's one of us. He's a Husker fan. Overlook the fact that he's – from Iowa, but you'd be supporting Paul, and you'd be learning. But I have to know, volumes 1 through 5, roughly how many pages, even in the Kindle version? Is that like 1,200 pages?
Oh, no, about 5,000, give or take. I've got the print versions sitting on my in my bookcase in my office here, and it's
you use it as a doorstop, don't you?
30 inches, maybe 24 inches.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Yeah, it's a good 5,000 pages. So
think of the value.
It's a little light reading, but during halftime, if you really want to do that, get into medieval knights early medieval knights and late medieval knights. And
ladies and gentlemen, you're never going to find a value like this. For just $4.99, you're getting roughly 5,000 pages of content. That is, on average, give or take, about $1 per 1,000 pages. Where else are you going to find a deal like that? Check out on Amazon the Cambridge Medieval History Volumes 1 through 5 by J.B. Burry and edited by our very own Paul Dalen.
Okay, so we can talk about knights, or we can move on to the gray lumpy turtles if you want to do that.
Yeah, let's move on to the lumpy turtles, the terrapins of Maryland. We, of course, we're in game week, but we do have, listeners who are like, come on, South Alabama, today away. But we've got to finish. We have unfinished business. I'm something of a finalist, or I don't know if that's even the right word. I'm not a finalist for anything. I did stay a Holiday Inn last night. No. But we've got to finish this task, and that is getting through the season with all the previews. Maryland, November 23rd. It's my wife's birthday. And I also know that I already have to work that day. So that's cool. But the Maryland Terrapins, and they are, they're in a world of hurt because they have a new coach and their best player is out for the season with an injury. Tough break for them. But Maryland could turn things around in the near future, Paul.
Well, they could. I don't know if I would put any money on that happening, but yeah.
Do it.
It could happen. In fact, I hear it's legal in, if you cross the border into Council Tucky. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
Maybe. It's sports betting. They tell me sports betting is now legal on Iowa riverboats. I would not recommend putting any money on Alabama having a resurgent season.
Well, we're talking about Maryland, so I think Alabama's.
You could probably... Did I say Alabama? Sorry, Loxley came from Alabama.
No, that's great because I really want people to think that Alabama's gonna circle the drain.
Yes, because perhaps our loyal listeners would remember a coach, Riley. They came here, and he was an altogether decent person, decent human being. But he had like a 50-50 career win record, and miraculously he finished exactly 50-50 in his time at Nebraska. Well, the Mike Loxley coming back to Maryland, his only experience as a head coach was at New Mexico, where he went a staggering 3-30 or something like that. How that ever allows you to coach again, I don't know.
Well,
but I'm not sure that this is the guy that's going to take a Big Ten program in the Big Ten East, for crying out loud, which is still one of the strongest divisions in all of college football, and somehow win football games. I just don't see this happening.
Here's the crazy thing about that. I'm really curious how he, I mean, as you mentioned, he came from Alabama where he was Nick Saban's offensive coordinator. Before that, he was the offensive coordinator at Maryland from 2012 to 2015. By the way, if people haven't learned by now, all of our information that we're talking about here is straight from Coronation and Husker Mike's fantastic game previews. But how do you go from...
Wait a minute, Greg.
What?
You mean you don't spend hours every day reading about turtle football?
So here's the thing. Last week, I was off a few days at the front of the week and actually put together some really quality show notes and had some audio and things like that to enhance the overall sound. But this week, I was working. So they get what they get this week. It just is what it is. But no, I don't have
to. Yeah, it is. And I thought I was just coming on for comic relief. So
now
I'm expected to have intelligent comments. And I'm really struggling here.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Even when, you know, the we're fully staffed in Haas and John, we still struggle for intelligent comments. Don't worry about that. You're fitting right in.
Okay. Well, that's good. Thanks for I appreciate the boost there in confidence. It definitely went off the charts. So.
It's not so much, you know, a boost of confidence as at least to say, hey, you're no worse than anybody than the rest of us. You're one of us. One of us. One of.
okay.
But my bigger question is, how do you go from being the offensive coordinator at Maryland in, you know, the early 20-teens? To see, he was named head coach for the second half of the 2015 season, or interim head coach. But then you spend a couple of years at Alabama as Saban's offensive coordinator. Like, how do you make that jump? What on his resume, or you know, who did he blackmail to get that offensive coordinator job at Alabama? And obviously, you look at the success that Alabama's had, you know, the last couple of years, and granted, losing to Clemson in the national championship, hey, that's, you know, more success than Nebraska's had in 20 plus years. But there has to be something in him schematically. You know, he has to have a good mind for the game. and maybe just the other pieces are missing. I don't know. A career record of 3-31 at New Mexico. I don't know how you parlay that into another head coaching job, but here we are. And he's
– well,
it's a – who knows? I was just going to say –
I'm sorry. I was talking over you there.
We do it a lot on the show.
I'm gonna guess that people are discounting the fact that – or discounting that record of a staggering, you know, 0.100 of because it was at New Mexico.
Did you just do that math in your head?
Well, yeah. Why? Dude, it's three over 30.
Hold on. Let me get my calculator out.
That's one-tenth. It's 0.100.
Oh, okay. See, I thought you – I must have misheard. I thought you said something. I thought you got overly specific. No, you're right. Yeah. One-tenth. 3/30. Continue.
Actually, it's not 3/30. It's 3/33. But
do not come onto the Five Heart podcast and nitpick.
You're correct. It's not very good. No. But it's at New Mexico. And let's admit, I mean, if you go to New Mexico, you're just sort of, you know, hanging out trying to wait for, I don't know, something to fall off the front page of Google, I guess.
If you go to New Mexico, then you're really hoping that Idaho Vandals job opens up soon.
It could be, or like Northwest A&M Tech or something like that.
But I'll say this about New Mexico. They have scheduled a tough non-con game week 2. Well, I think technically it's week 3 after a second week bye. They're going to make the trip to South Bend to face a top 10 Notre Dame team. So you never know what could happen with the Lobos of New Mexico.
Why, no, you don't.
Why we're still talking
about
that.
You can feel fairly confident that they're going to get destroyed when they go to South Bend. But you're right. You don't know. That's why we play the game. I understand that somehow Loxley won 3 games there. So it has to happen eventually, right? it has to happen an average of about once per season, I'm guessing. I mean, it's reasonable, right? Eventually they're going to play, you know, the Fighting Mosquitoes from Northwest Louisiana Tech or somewhere like that. So
Fighting Mosquitoes.
It could happen.
The biggest news really out of Maryland was that sophomore receiver Jashawn Jones tore his ACL first week of practice and is done. So, I mean, you've got a little bit of returning talent in DJ Turner and Dante Demas. And again, I don't know anything about these players. I don't even think I don't think we played Maryland last year, so none of this sounds familiar to me. That's going to be a win. Let's move on to Iowa and say that we're going to beat Maryland because it's the end of November and we're going to be firing all cylinders. And we're not going to look past them to Iowa, but we're going to take care of business against Maryland. Fair to say, Paul?
I think so.
I need to close out of that window.
Maryland is schizophrenic when it comes to both sides of the football, but they're fundamentally a bad team. And they are going to be a worse team this year than they were last year. So I think if anything is certain at all about this year's Huskers, I would chalk up the that is a win. Now, I'm much less confident about the Iowa game than I am about Maryland.
Now you say that, and here's the thing: if Haas were here, he'd be like, well, he said to me privately, and I'm sure he'll say it at the time, you know, when we get him on, he's like, can't wait. We're going to hang a 50 burger, half a hundy on Iowa. And, you know,
he's going to beat him up, take the lunch money and extort a 2-4 of whatever that is that he drinks. Is it Coors Banquet? Is that his favorite brew?
That's his poison of choice.
Yes. Full disclosure, I make this. I attended the University of Iowa, and as a graduate student. So, the swill of choice there was Dubuque Star, which was about 30 cents a can, if I remember right. It was what you used for quarters after you were already drunk, because you couldn't drink it on the way to getting drunk. You had to be good and good and drunk before you had any more of it. So Dubuque Star, if you're ever in Iowa City and you want to get sick, I recommend Dubuque Star beer.
I don't think you can get it for that price, though, anymore, can you?
I don't know. It might be $45 now. I mean, this is some high-quality brew. Who knows? Maybe I bet it's just a dollar. Maybe 75 cents a can now. I was in school a long, long time ago. So, should we talk about Iowa?
Please. They're going to have their first three-year starting quarterback since, you know, in a decade, since 2008 yes. to 2010. Nate Stanley coming back. He's a 59% or let's look at it, I guess, last year. He's a 59% passer, 2,800 yards, 26 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. But he lost a couple of big targets in the tight end game, so that helps Nebraska quite a bit. Obviously no Noah Fant anymore, and the other one is also gone. Hawkinson?
Yeah. Hawkinson, yeah, T.J. Hawkinson.
It was here, just name wasn't highlighted. Again, coronation.com, do what I did, search for Iowa, 2019 football preview, you're good to go. Thanks, Husker Mike. Go ahead.
Nobody asked me. Nate Stanley's not going to be on anyone's Heisman or preseason Heisman list, but he's a very, very, what's the right word I'm looking for here? He's a dependable quarterback, doesn't make mistakes. He's an accurate passer. The 26 to 10 touchdown to interception ratio is probably, you know, among the top 25 in the country for, you know, quarterbacks that had more than, say, 100 passes. He's all in a year where there just is not a superstar quarterback in the Big Ten. And I realize that there are a couple of names that the Husker fans would like to submit for that. He's the sole guy out there that's accomplished the most in the on the field. That's active this year. Fields at Ohio State, and obviously Martinez put up some amazing numbers, but we still finished 4-8. So you have to consider that.
I think that it seems like they don't require a lot from Nate Stanley. You know, I mean, look at their game plan last year. You know, it was a lot about ball control. You know, and it was, you know, their running back Sargent had 179 yards against Nebraska on that Black Friday. But it's, you know, they don't ask a whole lot of Nate Stanley, and he does what he's asked to do. You know, it's maintain the possession, keep the ball, run the clock, and limit the opposition's opportunities.
Yeah. Iowa is, well, for as much as we love to make fun of them, Iowa has produced offensive and defensive lines that have been superior to Nebraska's for about, well, certainly offensive lines for the last decade and defensive lines for, say, the last 5 years, certainly. And which allows players, which are good, maybe not great, but good players to flourish behind. And Iowa's not a spectacular team. They're not going to, I mean, Iowa's is probably an 8-win team again this year. Cause they're always an 8-win team. I think this talk about Iowa winning the division is kind of silly. I don't see that happening in any way. Looking at their schedule, it's pretty tough. But having an experienced senior quarterback accounts for a lot. So I don't know if we should write them off. because of that either.
They on the defensive side of the ball, they only have four returning starters. And you have a junior in A.J. Epenesa, who didn't even start last year, didn't start a single game, but still was all Big Ten, 10.5 sacks and 8 quarterback hurries. And quote-unquote NFL draft experts are expecting those numbers to jump as he becomes a full-time contributor, and he could be, you know, a top 10 draft pick next spring. Mel Kiper Jr. suggests top 5, blah, blah, blah. So that's one, you know, factor that Nebraska has to deal with, you know, assuming by the end of November everybody's still healthy, and obviously we don't technically wish ill will on anyone, you know, and no injuries and or anything like that. But, you know, so that's a big force on the defensive side. But otherwise, I think they're going to be a little bit more inexperienced on defense. And hopefully, by the time November 29th rolls around, Nebraska will be able to, you know, be firing on all cylinders and pick the defense apart. But then, the time you say that, it's the last game of the season, and their defense won't be as green. So it's a double-edged sword.
Well, it is, but especially since that's what we do when we do preseason previews. We extrapolate what we expect to happen next week to Thanksgiving weekend. But I think you're absolutely right. Iowa's offense is going to be solid. Their offensive line is, as usual, very good. Again, Stanley is the most experienced quarterback in the Big Ten right now, and they have a stable of serviceable junior running backs. So they're going to be fine on offense, but their defense is not what it has been for the last several years. And I really believe Nebraska's offense is potentially national championship caliber this year, or moving in that direction anyway. And I think that's the key matchup. And I think that Nebraska wins fairly handily against Iowa this year. And it's the first time in probably 6 years I think I've said that. So, yeah, I would pick Iowa to – or excuse me, I would pick Nebraska to beat Iowa probably by 13. But we shall see. A lot can happen between now and 12 games from now.
That's right. And 14 short weeks. But you don't have to wait 14 weeks before we get talking about this week's competitor, opposition, woo-hoo! However you want to talk about it, South Alabama. We're going to talk with Paul Dalen about that and a few other Husker notes for you here in just a minute when we come back to the 5-Heart Podcast.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Welcome back to the 5-Heart Podcast. Greg Mahochko here with Paul Dalen, who was our scheduled guest, and now he's just become the co-host because Haas needs a new computer and John needs a less stressful job. Probably, right? I mean, we all probably need less stressful jobs, right, Paul?
Oh, well, I could use one.
Me too.
But then I get to decompress by doing fun stuff like this. So I feel very blessed.
And
I'm not going to complain.
You are welcome. I was trying to figure out how to parlay this podcasting thing into a full-time job. And then I'm like, man, I'm going to need a lot more listeners for that. And so I'm trying something else on my other show about you know, upping the content level, things like that. So who knows? Who knows where it'll lead? Because my body's only going to last so long driving that truck, I can tell you that much. So enough about that. Before we get to South Alabama, that will be the last bit of business that we do this week. And I do already have some score predictions in from the other two legs of the tripod. We'll get to those here in a little bit. Some good and bad news both coming out of Lincoln this week. We're going to start with the unfortunate side, and that is that two Huskers have been suspended indefinitely from all football team activities. Now, while we don't know specifics, and Coach Scott Frost did not elaborate on it, we do know that wide receiver Andre Hunt and tight end Katerian Legrone have been suspended, not just for the game, but from all team activities. And I'm assuming that means practices, meetings, everything. Any thoughts on that, Paul?
It's hard to know. It's hard to know. Frost is not giving out any more specifics than what you just read. Having watched this kind of thing for nigh on 35 years now, it seems like when something like that comes out that's not associated with arrests are public, or even if they're tried to kept quiet, they never stay that way. So it's usually some kind of conflict or serious breach of team rules. I know that part of the culture that Frost has tried to rebuild is kind of capturing that unity council sort of, you know, team first, team always mentality that characterized the mental state of our championship teams in the 90s, which is something Frost is trying to bring back. So if I had to guess, it probably has something to do with some sort of serious breach of trust with fellow teammates or something like that. But hey, you know, everybody's guess is as good as mine. So what do you think?
I think it's as ridiculous as it sounds. It's one of those things that is probably, he's not necessarily at liberty to discuss. I think if it were a violation of team rules, they'd come out and say it's a violation of team rules. I don't know what.
I thought he did. I thought that's what they said, that it was a violation of team rules. Did I imagine that?
I mean, anything's possible. I imagine a lot of stuff.
Okay.
let's see here. Not a game suspension. They're suspended from all team activities. Let's see. It says the announcement explains why they were not on the depth chart. They were talked about very highly during spring football, but were not on the depth chart. So
then you may be right. In which case, I think it's probably completely inappropriate for us to speculate, because there could be something serious.
Both
alleged. But everyone is entitled to a defense, and I think I'm not going to go around, you know, speculating about some sort of malicious activity.
So,
on the part of a player,
the things that we have heard about, I mean, there's been no shortage of, you know, like citations for weed and things like that do get out, and Maurice Washington, who we'll mention here briefly, is a game time decision as far as he's been practicing with the team all fall, and you know, as of Thursday morning, Scott Frost said, quote, "The ball's not in his court. It's in our court for the university and football program to decide, but he's been doing a great job doing everything we ask him to in fall camp, so he'll be ready if that's the decision that's made." We don't know when. I mean, I guess if he's suited up on Saturday, then we'll know otherwise. But, you know, that's a serious, potential, felony situation in California. But that's not anything that they've, shied away from discussing. So the only thing that I can think of with these two might be, scholastic or academic, depending on, your wording, that maybe even the decision was taken out of the coaching staff's hand. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to know. There are other possibilities, but I have no interest in even mentioning what they are. So, yeah, it's a loss to the team. It's a big loss, actually. We could not afford to lose those two young men. But the team, one of the hallmarks of the team that Frost is building and the culture of winning is, you know what, they can survive this. I mean, Frost came through some pretty serious calamities on the team himself. So I suspect that he'll be just fine, or the team will be fine. We've got a fairly easy game on Saturday, a tune-up game to work through. So I think we'll be fine.
Well, let's talk about some good news involving some young men who have chosen Nebraska. Late last week, I guess it was probably about the day after we published this. So, yeah, the 21st. Apparently, it was before we published this. Anyway, we didn't mention this on last week's show because we recorded earlier in the week. But Nebraska received a pair of running back commitments, the first being Sevion Morrison, a 5'11", 196-pound, three-star running back from Tulsa, Oklahoma, who chose the Huskers over Arkansas, Baylor, Washington, Missouri, and several other FBS teams. He did get an offer from Wisconsin, and he said he would take the official visit to Madison in the fall. Oklahoma did not offer for Morrison. Let's see. Rushed for 263 yards per game as a junior. And that's impressive. I mean,
it's free. It absolutely is. But for these big, talented, you know, heading for the next level, running backs, they're essentially playing against they're men playing against boys, basically. And so it's not shocking to me to see stats like it's certainly eye popping. It's a ridiculous amount of yards, but it high school football is just crazy. I mean, you can you're depending on the size of the school, and I don't know how big the high school that Morrison went to was, but you can get the ball a lot, I'm not shocked. I am impressed, though. It certainly is. It is certainly eyebrow raising numbers.
It's Tulsa, so it's not one of the smaller communities in Oklahoma.
It's not 8-man football.
No, or six. Those poor people. So that was one commitment that was picked up last week after we stopped recording. The other one came to us on the 24th, and out of Florida, a big power back by the name of Marvin Scott III, and he picked Nebraska over, again, from Florida. Looks like Florida State, Louisville, Michigan, Alabama were among other teams that were, quote, campaigning for his services. He was at the Big Red Barbecue in June, and he also took an official visit to Florida State and Georgia Tech. Looks like he had a good time in Lincoln. And when they call it, you know, a power back, what comes to your mind when you hear that phrase or those words?
Well, recently it would be like a Zigbo. But in my mind, a power back is Amon Green or Lawrence Phillips. You know, that sort of 6'2", 215 to 220, you know, semi-truck in a football helmet kind of player. I mean, you can if you're 225 and 5'9", then they call you a fullback, and you get a token 2 carries per game. But if you're 6'2" and 225, then you get 25 carries per game.
So he's listed at 5'9" and 203, a three star back out of Port Orange.
I actually thought he was taller than that. Because he doesn't. That's like pork chop. size.
Hey, wait a minute. I like pork chops.
I did too.
I feel like I'm missing something.
But Ross is in the last 2 decades. Corey Ross is the stereotypical bowling ball of that size, the 5'8", 5'9" back. And now I feel seriously stupid because I thought he was like 6'1".
So
because he looks that way.
He only played in 8 games as a junior. Had just over 1,200 yards and 17 touchdowns in 8 games. Not a bad output. I mean, he's got a little bit of speed, you know, but he's not afraid to go and not afraid of contact. So, should be interesting. I'm all for, you know, adding more depth in the backfield. I mean, you never know.
You can never have too much, especially if you're tilting towards a running based offense. That takes a lot of abuse. And if you can spread those carries around a little bit, it's never a bad thing. I actually think that at least one of those guys, if not both of them, will finish the season as 4 stars. But we shall see. I know I'm not the only person to suggest that, but I just got a good feeling about them. So I think it was nice to finally see a running back being recruited or signing. I know we've recruited plenty of them. It just feels like it's been, I don't know, this is Frost's third season of recruiting, and it feels like we're our second season and losing track. Third year of recruiting, it just feels like we've never signed a running back. And I know that's not true, but it just has felt like it's been that long.
I think the Sevion Morrison one was the one that broke the drought.
Has it really been that long?
I think
since we
so.
Signed
yeah.
a running back.
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm not imagining it. Yeah. It's good. Now let's go find that 6'2", 225-pound back.
I was gonna say let's go find that 6'5" wide receiver that can stretch the field.
I think we need both. I think we arguably have that. Well, we don't have the 6'5" wide receiver, but we have plenty of receivers that can stretch the field. We don't have. We are more talented at the receiving core than we are at the running back core right now, and it just still seems weird to say those things. But I don't think Frost would. I think Frost would prefer to have an Amon Green or a Lawrence Phillips or somebody like that in the backfield with him or with Martinez in addition to the weapons, the receiving core weapons that we have. So let's go find one. Maybe we need a couple of 10 or 11 win seasons before those guys start, you know, looking beyond Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State to the plains where you can see all the way to, I don't know, the Sandhills.
we have talked about the majesty that is the Nebraska landscape before on the show, so we're not going to run down the Sandhills and Chimney Rock and Lake McConaughey. That's not what we're here to do. We're here to talk some football.
We are.
And let's get to it. South Alabama is in town. And
they are.
And with God. Their head coach, Steve
God
Campbell.
God have mercy on their souls. That's all I got to say.
they did not do well last year. Phil Steele. And we're going to kind of get you up to speed, but listeners know that we've talked about South Alabama back when we first started previewing teams. So that was a month ago, and that's why we're doing it the day before the season starts. South Alabama is ranked 125th out of the 130 Division I A football teams in Phil Steele's Power Poll. He thinks that they're going to finish a lofty 3-9. So that's cool.
That would be consistent.
That's where they were last year.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned Steve Campbell. In fact, up until last week, I had the Steve Campbell Google search up on my my computer here because we were going to try to have him on the show. And I just never reached out. I'm like, hey, he's probably going to be busy. I mean, let's face it. It's Thursday night before the game. I'm sure he's got more important things to do than who are these jackwads that want to talk to me about football. So good luck to you, Coach Campbell, after this Saturday. There's not a whole lot to really discuss about them, as far as I can tell. I'm more interested in the weather, which is, you know, not as crazy as it sounds because it's A, Nebraska, but two, because of what happened last year. And there's a little bit of rain in the forecast for Saturday morning in Lincoln. And we're just going to – I'm not anticipating any delays, anything like that. I think maybe that's why Bill Moose, you never know, maybe that's why he had the early game. That way you can have a delay and start at 2 instead of canceling, you know, a game altogether like he did last year. Go ahead.
Does Nebraska have any say, or does the team have any say in the TV slots that it's assigned? I don't think they do.
I have no idea.
I think we could just as easily have ended up with a 7 p.m. slot. And I'm very glad that we didn't, because I do not want to go through that again, or through the, you know, the Charlie Foxtrot that was the Akron game last year. So let's, or the non-Akron game last year. I'm actually normally fundamentally opposed to 11 a.m. football games. But until we can, I don't know, maybe get into October and these kinds of thunderstorms are just not that common anymore. Maybe we need to be okay with the 11 a.m. games. So, like, if Akron was at 11 a.m., we probably would have gotten that game in at some point.
Absolutely right. And then we would have finished the season with a 6-6 record. 7-6. We would have won the bowl game.
Well, it is interesting to war game out what would have happened if we had played Akron. Although, judging by our performance in starting in about game 4, so I'm not sure that the Akron was a certain win. I realize Akron is bad, like South Alabama bad, but we had some issues last year, and it's hard to know what would have happened if we'd have actually played that game. And I think that losing to Akron, which, by the way, was the first game of the 1997 season, which is a good year for Frost. Starting out by losing to Akron, I think would have been it would have been really bad.
So I'm gonna go down that road. If they started early, if they got that game in against Akron, they would have won. And since they would have had that first game under their belt, they would have beat Colorado, and then they would have beat Troy. So then you're 3-0 going to the Big House.
Maybe. Again, I don't share your confidence that we would have so certainly have won
because
beat Akron. Well, it's likely, but I think
the atmosphere was so electric, no pun intended, with the lightning, that they roll over Akron. Scott Frost, first game, you know, back at Memorial Stadium. And with that confidence, they go, and Colorado doesn't – the defense, the front seven dominated the line, you know, like 7 sacks or something like that in that game against Colorado. And Nebraska was on pace to come back and win that until Adrian Martinez got injured. Yeah. So I think that one – that game is not close enough that the Colorado player cheap shots and twists the knee on Martinez. So there's win number 2. And then Troy is Troy, and you win that one because you only lost it by 5 anyway. You go to the Big House, and I get it. It's the Big House. It was, at you know, towards the end of the season anyway, it was the top defense in the country, and they got exposed by Ohio State, but that's a story for another day. So you probably hang an L there. So you're 3-1. Then you have Purdue, and you're probably going to – play them close and probably win that one. I think, I mean, there's three wins that are, you know, hanging up in the win column that wouldn't be there otherwise. The makeup game, you know, we had Bethune-Cookman instead, so that was a win. Yeah, Wisconsin being Wisconsin, you can take that one, you know, either way. We beat Northwestern. It doesn't go to OT. We beat Minnesota. You know, we might even beat Ohio State because we only lost to them by five. So I'd be all right with that. Then you went over Illinois and Michigan State, and then you beat Iowa. So yeah, then you're looking, if you play Akron and you win, you're looking at about two losses last year instead of 4-8 season. I'm just saying. Three losses. I forgot about Wisconsin.
You know, you can only get that kind of high quality analysis here on the Five Heart Podcast.
That's right.
And Corn Nation.
That kind of homerism.
I hope our listeners truly understand the insights that they can only get here.
I mean, not that they're not all thinking and be like, he's right. By God, if we would have played Akron, anything could have happened. That'd have been a completely different season. Yeah. So as we get to the end here, because, you know, I still got to produce this and go to bed at a decent time. South Alabama, I do have some scores, as I mentioned, some predictions from Haas and John. John, and both of them are comparable. John says 62-7. Haas says 66-17. Paul, do you have a score prediction?
I can't see us scoring that much in the first game. Primarily because if we're up by 40, I think
Noah Vedral's
team is done.
Noah Vedral's going to do for Nebraska what he did at UCF.
Maybe or the second stream quarterback doesn't actually really. Moniker doesn't really mean that much, and we go straight to McCaffrey, who I believe, because this is relevant, because we just completed our Iowa preview. We have a McCaffrey on this team.
Correct.
Who is just waiting to strike fear in the hearts of Hawkeye fans. So I can't wait to see that. Maybe 3 years from now, but Luke McCaffrey is going to drive a stake through the heart of every Hawkeye fan.
East of the
Missouri.
I like the sound of that.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Because his, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but his brother sort of put on a all-purpose yards clinic versus Iowa, I think in the Rose Bowl a couple of years ago. So, okay, back to South Alabama. I'm going to say 47-17, and we don't cover. Obviously, Nebraska 47. I think that Frost is much more interested in getting some experience for the rest of the players. This is a perfect opportunity kind of game to do that. It is still a first game, so it's going to be ugly. We're going to screw up stuff that should have been easy touchdowns. We're going to drop, you know, easy 60-yard play action pass touchdowns because we're stupid and it's the first game of the season and that's what happens in the first game of the season. So, no, I just don't see us getting to 60. I don't see us getting to 50 for that very reason. I also don't see how we stay under 40. So, let's go 40-17.
Well, I don't hate it, but I like 55-13 a lot better.
Nebraska has won a lot of games by scoring 55 points. It just seems to be a really common common score. So well, I like that too.
Not enough to
change my prediction. But
how do you know that?
Oh, I don't know. I watch football and I know things. That's what I do.
That's funny because I have a shirt that says I drink and I know things. So thank you, Tyrion Lannister.
Everybody says that. So, You know, I can only name one. I can only only one game in particular pops off or pops into my head of, as being that score. But I know that we've had lots of other times that we've finished at 55 points. And the one I'm thinking of would be Michigan State versus Saban. that was, I think, the second game of the 95 season, immediately preceding a certain infamous incident. I think that was 55-10. So, you know what? Did you guess 55-10 or 55-7?
I did 55-13.
13. Okay. As long as it's not 55-10, because I think that's an unlucky score. So let's go 55-13. Or you go with that. I think you're crazy. I don't think we're going to score that much. So
what happens if we're both wrong and they score 70 points?
Well, then John will rub it in our noses because that's what he does. So we'll never hear the end of it.
By the way,
how he was better guesser than we were.
You're not wrong.
It's just a guess. So
you're not wrong. It was September 9, 1995. In East Lansing, when Nebraska beat Michigan State 50-10, and do you know who was 50 the
10? I thought it was 55. Oh, I was wrong.
But do you know? Do you know who was the quarterback in that game for Nebraska?
Yeah, Scott Frost. No. In that game,
yep.
Behringer was right.
Yep.
Yeah, because Tommy started the first game, and then had the blood clots. So, yeah. That was Behringer. And then he made one more game and had a deflated lung. Is that what it's called? Deflated?
Who punctured? Frazier or Behringer?
Behringer. Against Wyoming. And then we had Terman. And the state had a collective, you know, sales of Xanax went through the roof.
Right.
that week in Nebraska. So good stuff. Good stuff. And I thought it was 55-10. It's 50-10. Okay, good.
So I'm still sticking with my 55-13. I think that it's possible that South Alabama will try to go for two and get stuffed. Either that or they'll kick a couple of field goals. I don't know. I'm feeling that 55-13, and it feels good. So, Paul, I want to thank you for stepping in. You had some moderately decent-sized shoes to fill, and you exceeded them. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
You remember how we end the show?
I do.
If I say a little bit and then throw it to you for a little GBR, we'll be ready to rock it. Perfect. All right, everybody. We thank you so much for tuning in this week to the Five Heart Podcast. Remember, you can get it on your favorite podcast app. Maybe it's Apple Podcasts or Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, or Spotify, or probably others. I don't know. Those are the ones that I know about for sure. And you can be part of the conversation on social media and Twitter, Facebook. You can even leave us a voicemail. And Hoss is usually Johnny on the spot with the voicemail number. I don't have it right now. I apologize. We'll post it. You can check it out later. It's all good. But leave a voicemail, especially after the game. Let us know your post-game thoughts, and we'll play them on the show next week. So for the other members of the tripod who are not with us, Hoss and John Dam Johnston, for the co-host this week, Paul Dalen, my name is Greg Mahochko, and we remind you this week and every week that Five Heart is all the heart you need. Paul?
Go Big Red.
And I get to say it. I'm so excited. Win the damn game.
Oh my God, it's not the off season anymore.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.